Revolution Radio with your host, Hal Shurliff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Tuesday and Friday nights at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick it up on automatic.com as well as our YouTube channel. And it's brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp, from July 19th to the 24th, at the beautiful Singing Hills Christian Camp and Conference Center in Plainfield, New Hampshire, about an hour north of the state capital of Concord. And one of our new instructors for next this year's camp is on the line here, C.J. Pearson. How are you doing?
Hey, Hal. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, before I forget, we're having an all-day seminar in upstate New York, March 7th, a Saturday, and we wondered if you could call in, Skype in for about 10 minutes. It's mostly homeschool.
Oh, that'd
young
be
homeschool
great.
Group.
I'd love to.
All right.
That'd be
yeah,
great.
So I'll make arrangements and we'll make that happen. Anyway, now I've known about this remarkable young man for about 4 years when you were probably about 12 or 13. You had made a stance against Obamacare, and just about a month ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, one of our instructors, Professor Willie Soon, who's one of the top climate realists in the world, sent a link of something of a challenge you gave to Greta Thunberg, that you would debate her on the climate change issue. And I thought, boy, I could better get a hold of this fellow. And we did. You were very prompt and on your website, and you got right back to me. So tell us, if you were going to debate Greta, well, before we do that, can you tell the millions of listeners a little bit about your background, who you are, where you're from?
Definitely. Well, again, I want to thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I am, you know, such an incredible fan and supporter of the work that you're doing to teach, you know, other young people about America's founding ideals. It's such important work, especially when we live in a time in which those ideals are increasingly under assault by the left. And
right.
So I commend you for that. To give you your listeners a little bit a background about me, I'm 17 years old. I'm a high school senior. I'll be graduating high school in a few months, and it cannot come soon enough. I'm super excited about that. But besides that, you know, I've had the opportunity to be involved in conservative politics since I was 11 years old. I got my start doing the grunt work of politics. I was knocking on doors, making phone calls, talking to voters, and advocating for my preferred candidate back then in 2014 was the first campaign cycle I worked in. My candidate was running for Congress. He actually won that campaign, and that's kind of when I caught the political bug. And since then, I've stayed busy. That video that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, I actually made that when I was, I think, 12 years old. Hadn't even hit puberty yet. I think you can literally hear the voice crack in that video. But, you know, I gave kind of President Obama a little bit of a piece of my mind there, and it took off, like, almost overnight. Wasn't expecting it at all, and it just, since then, it's been something I've continued. I've continued to elevate, you know, try to elevate, you know, young conservative voices, because oftentimes, you see from the media perpetuating this myth that all young people are liberal, that young people don't have conservative ideals, and you see that even more so when it comes to those within the black community. You see people who like to argue that black people can't be conservative. I disagree with that notion, you know, and it's kind of an interesting path for me, and I think it's few that many would expect, you know, being as young as I am, being a member of the black community, but also being the son of Democrats. You know, I come from a rather liberal household. They're not the biggest fans of the president, as, you know, I'm a huge fan, and, you know, they were big supporters of President Obama. I wasn't, and so I think it has definitely been an interesting road for me, but it's been one that has been definitely exciting, and I'm excited about what's to come as well.
Well, let me ask you, you live in greater Atlanta.
No, I actually live about 2 hours outside of Atlanta in Augusta.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, people probably know about Augusta because of the Masters, yeah.
Oh, the golf, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now your parents are liberal, and what mm-hmm. – what influenced you to think a little differently? And many of us, my parents were, my dad was a, you know, moderate conservative, my mom same way. So I didn't grow up in a liberal household. But when you do, there's a good chance that your children will become liberal. But and you didn't really rebel. You still have a lot of course respect for your parents, obviously, and
Definitely.
they no doubt respect you. Or at least you wouldn't be able to do what you do. Put the kibosh on it years ago.
Yeah.
But what was it? Was it any one thing that said, "Hey, I don't think this is right"?
Yeah. You know, for me, I think it was about, I think it's twofold. You know, first and foremost, I've always been someone who wants to find out for myself things, you know, and it was the same when it came to my politics. You know, regardless of what my parents believe, I wanted to know what I believed. And so that started with a lot of research. I looked at the platforms of both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I read the Constitution, the Federalist Papers. I wanted to know more about the history of our country, its founding, but also where the party stood today. And the more I learned about conservatism, you know, from listening and reading and just really digging deep into the ideology and the philosophy behind it and what it all meant, I just felt like conservative ideals were common sense ideals. I didn't necessarily believe that the government should spend more than it took in. I thought that was common sense. Apparently it isn't. I didn't think that, you know, I thought that it made sense to have a strong national security. I thought that personal responsibility was something that we should all, you know, strive to uphold and to promote, because that's just how I was raised. You know, even in a liberal household, and this is the thing and this is that second point. You know, the black community may vote overwhelmingly Democrat, 97%, you know, Democrat, but at the same time, the ideals within the black community are still very much conservative. You know, I've grown up going to church every Sunday. You know, traditional values very much are very prevalent within my household. I've grown up with a strong appreciation for family and community. And so, being a conservative wasn't hard for me. Honestly, I would argue that maybe my parents are when it comes to their values and their morals, right? They may not vote that way, but they are. And so for me, I think it was a combination of those two things, wanting to find out where I stood on the issues myself, also going into it not even thinking that black people have to be Democrat, but also just reading more and just digging deep into the issues was really important for me.
Well, it looks like the white Democrats just take the black Democrats for granted. They'll say, we don't even have to campaign because they're all going to support us. But that's not the case anymore, especially in the last 4 years. And whether someone loves Donald Trump but dislikes him, I think there's no middle ground when it comes to Trump. You love him, you hate him. But
yeah.
He has a lot of support in the black community. And you could just do a search on YouTube and put black conservatives for Trump, and there's hundreds, if not thousands, of videos. But if you put black conservatives for Bush or for McCain, probably not so much. The people weren't getting too excited about Bush. But Trump has a lot of black supporters. Barbara from Harlem, who's a friend of ours and been one of our camp instructors, she left the Democrat Party when she realized they no longer supported her values. And then you have the two sisters there. Diamond and Silk. Yeah. Have you met them?
I've not met them, but I'm huge fans of their work.
Oh, they're incredible. And you know what? They bring sense of humor to it too. They did the funniest thing. They did
definitely
a press conference with Sarah Huckabee. And they kind of like were able to copy and paste. They said, "Hey, honey, you sit back, we'll get in there." And they're yelling at the reporters. It was really great stuff. And it's even celebrities.
What you're talking about there is so big, and it speaks to the movement that President Trump has unleashed in this country, because you cannot argue against his record the past 3.5 years. You're looking at tremendous economic growth. You're looking at the lowest black unemployment rate in our nation's history. You're looking at, you know, steady job creation, you know, record stock market performance in the stock market. He has a record that you cannot refute has benefited not only the black community, but Americans of every shade and of every hue. But when you're talking about also other issues like criminal justice reform, this is something that Democrats talked a lot about for the longest time but didn't do anything about. But this president did. And I think that many people in the black community are looking at this issue and saying, wow, like, this is the president who didn't just talk a good game to us, you know, during election year, but did. And also, too, and this is the president who didn't neglect the black community, right? Because like he didn't win because of black support in 2016. I think he
No,
got
not at
3%
all.
of the black vote. But he's doing these things for the black community, not because he has to do it to win. He's doing it because it's the right thing to do. You know, Democrats can go in the black community. They can talk about all these things. They can talk about revitalization and, you know, closing the gap and all these crazy things that don't really mean anything but sound good and are emotionally stirring. But when you look at these communities that are ran by liberals in cities like Chicago and Detroit, what is the state of the black community in those cities? And I think people within the black community are starting to open their eyes and realize that liberal policies have done nothing for our people. They've done nothing for our community. They haven't brought us forward. They've done nothing but hold us back. And I think and that's exactly why you've seen the surge and groundswell of support for the president within the black community.
You know, the formula isn't that complicated. You simply reduce the size of government, reduce taxes, roll back regulations. That's really the formula, and then the economy will rebound.
But you're talking economics. You're talking. They don't know economics.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the problem. AOC may have minored in economics, but you can't tell. You cannot tell.
It's it's not a president's job to go out and hire people to create jobs. It's his job to administer the Constitution. And when you do that, you roll back big government. In fact, it was the second or third day he after he took his oath of office, he's sitting in a room with Rand Paul, senator from Kentucky. I shared a stage with him when he was just a humble doctor at one of the first, I think something was called the very first Tea Party of the modern era in Boston on the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. And he rolled back, reduced the regulations that shut down a lot of these coal mines. Hillary said she said they'll all be working in McDonald's. She was laughing about it. In West Virginia, that had been a solid Democrat state, for, you know, union state for years. Mm. I think Trump carried it by about 85%. You know, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he was true to his word. I have to say, there he is in Racine. And then he said, didn't he pass a resolution saying that? For every one new regulation, three have to be repealed. That was rich.
Now, we've seen the fruit of that.
We actually have some young people in our camp that have something we call the Agenda 21 Challenge, and they extended Greta an invitation to come to camp. And in fact, we have a contact in Sweden that actually made sure the mother got the message, you know, because the mother's sort of the gatekeeper for Greta. But you challenged her. Now, I'm sure she didn't get back to you and say, let's do it. But what would you have told Greta if she gave you the time of day, that she was able to sit down with you or even share a podium or a lectern with you? What would you tell Greta on the climate change issue?
You know, what I would tell her is, like, let's have a debate on the facts of this issue. Let's remove the emotion. Let's remove the rhetoric and all of that. Let's just talk about the facts of this issue. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, you can come to America, you can blame us for climate change and all of these things, but shouldn't we be talking about China, who refuses to really do any work at all to reduce their emissions, but you don't see Greta calling out China the way she does the United States. And also the way in which she's going about this agenda, right? She's talking about, you know, climate change as the government needs to take the most action to reduce these emissions and to, you know, protect the environment and all these things. But if we're being real here, and you hit on it there, earlier when you were talking about job creation, you don't hire more government employees to create jobs. You give the private sector the latitude and the ability to do so through deregulation. If we really want to move towards renewable energies and things of that nature, that's going to happen in the private sector. We need to let the private sector do what they do, innovate, create, so that we can create alternatives to the coal industry, to the oil industry, which are still very booming for our economy, very good for us. I think we are now a next exporter of oil now. But if that's the future she's looking to move towards, and maybe that is the future we should move towards, you know, and all of the above approach to energy. That's something that, you know, people like Governor Rick Perry of Texas, who, you know, recently served Secretary of Energy, has, you know, fought for and advocated for. If that's really what we're looking to move towards, then that's going to happen because the private sector make some moves to make that a reality. And that's going to be through deregulation. It's not going to be through carbon emission taxes. It's not going to be through any of those things that drive up the cost of electricity for everybody. But it's going to be through getting government out of the pie, and getting them out of the pot, and letting the private sector create. What she's advocating for is a government takeover of industry that is not going to do anything but drive up costs for consumers. And just literally, we've seen it. You know, government doesn't solve problems as much as it creates problems. That's exactly what's going to happen if Greta Thunberg gets her way. And that may work in Sweden, and I wish her the best there, but this is the United States, and that's not how we do things.
Actually, it won't work in Sweden because they have a modern economy, and you need energy. And having a million wind turbines and solar panels everywhere will not do it. It will not simply – you cannot generate enough electricity. I've seen some formulas, for example, if you want to have wind turbines to power New York City, you'd have to have, the size of the whole state, enough turbines covering the whole state of New York, which is a good-sized state, in order to generate enough electricity. And of course, even the turbines have their problems. They are not very green. They require a lot of carbon to be set up, tons of concrete, clear cutting, and so forth. And when the blades
and the birds,
killing the birds, and they're making people sick with the low level frequency and the strobe effect. So there's all, and not only that, but you still need wind to turn them, and if it's too much wind, they have to shut them down. And if there's not enough wind, I'll drive by some of these so-called wind farms, and I'll see just sitting there. Well, when you turn on your coffee pot in the morning, you expect that electricity to be there, and if there's no wind blowing, you can't store that stuff. You can't store the wind. Yeah. I think you can store some of the solar panels with batteries, but it's terrible. It drives the price up considerably, and still it's limited. And again, you need the sun to store batteries, to generate electricity from the panels. And the panels take up a lot of space, and they're made of heavy metal toxins. Toxic waste comes off of them. They were talking about having gardens around the solar. They call them solar farms. I've never actually seen solar seeds grow up from the ground that you harvest them. I don't want to eat any produce that's being raised by near a solar panel. It's going to be tainted. So. And we've made lots of progress with the oil and gas, and the gas is a very clean burning gas, and we've got plenty of it too. Especially here in the Northeast, the Marcellus Shale, and that's why we're exporting this stuff. I'm 61 years of age. I don't remember us since I remember the oil embargoes when in the early 70s and the gas rationing when you had to line up and buy gas every other day or what have you. Because we were reliant upon. In fact, when they created the Department of Energy, we became more dependent on foreign oil. You made a point a little while ago about federal government employees don't create jobs, they stymie jobs, and that's an example right there. The Department of Energy doesn't produce one watt, but they have restricted lots of that. So now we got about maybe about 8-9 minutes left. Since you've been outspoken on these issues, where have people seen you? I know you travel around the country on a limited basis because you're still in school, but you're on Fox News, you're on all kinds of other media outlets. So tell us a little bit about that.
Definitely, the opportunity to do a little bit of what you mentioned there. Take my message across the country. Speaking to other students and doing things like going on Fox News and offering a really kind of unique view on these issues, because what you've seen from the media, you hear a lot about Greta Thunberg, but you don't see the media elevating conservative youth in the way they've elevated Greta. They make it seem as if every young person in America is a bleeding heart liberal. But I got to tell you, that just isn't the case from what I've started to see. I see more and more young people starting to realize that not everything is free. And we don't want everything to be free, because if everything is free, then the quality of everything just goes down. And you know, and we're going to feel that cost in one way or another. And you also see lots of young people wanting border security. You know, they want to feel safe, you know, in their community, in their homes, and things like that. And what I think you're going to see, because the radicalism that the left has begun to drift towards, you're going to see a lot of young people saying, like, I don't know if this makes sense. Like, do I really want, you know, no immigration enforcement? Do I want an open border? Do I want to be competing with immigrants, you know, for these jobs that, you know, I've been here my entire life? Like, is this something that, is this the reality I want to live in, you know? And so I think you're going to see, because of the radicalism of the left, a lot more young people saying, like, I can't vote for that. I'm way too sensible for that. I can't do it. And so for me, you know, what I've really been doing is talking about these issues, you know, going on things like YouTube, Facebook, and meeting young people where they are. Because I think it's great to, you know, to preach to the choir. That's always fun, you know, getting some affirmation at times. But I think the more hearts and minds we change is how we win. Because I think it is so important that we start creating a movement and fostering a movement where more young people will begin to think for themselves and believe and remember the ideals upon which our country was founded, because that is key to the preservation of them. The moment we forget the ideals that our country was founded upon, that is when we lose our country, and we can never allow that to happen. So that's kind of been the focus of my work and what I'm excited to continue to do following my graduation and many years to come.
What I think, in addition to trying to win people over, it's also to encourage or motivate those that are already in our circle, young people, but they're reluctant to speak out because of peer pressure, or the professor or the teacher will give them a bad grade if they disagree with the thesis that is thrown at them. And, you know, I live in the city of Boston. I live in one of the nicer neighborhoods, West Roxbury, but I used to be conservative Democrats, now the next generation liberal. I'll wear my, you know, something with a gun issue of my T-shirts. Most of the people I talk to are conservative. I just met a business lady who's really against this ridiculous plastic bag ban, and she said, and I said, you know, there's so many people that think the way we think, if they can just open their mouths, you know, and not be afraid to speak out, I think we have a better chance of turning this around a lot sooner. And your voice, not only would it inspire young people, but young Black Americans too, who should say, you know what, I don't fault this baloney that's being, and how could I, you know, how could I put up Bernie Sanders and guys like Joe Biden? These are people that they're supposed to help the Black community. You get it. You give me a break.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No,
you're completely right.
There's another, you just started something, an organization. I got be getting
yeah,
your emails.
Yeah, Last of USA.
Last?
Hope USA.
Oh, yeah. So tell those listeners a little bit about that and where they can find out information about that as well.
Definitely. I kind of touched on it a little bit before. You know, the most important thing and the most important fight on our hands right now is ensuring that the next generation of young people are aware of the ideals upon which our country was founded. But sadly and unfortunately, they're not being taught that in schools much anymore. And so what Last Hope USA is all about is furthering civic education. More young people need to know about the Constitution, about our founding documents, and about our nation's founding ideals. Because, again, the moment we forget is the moment we lose those ideals forever. And so we want to foster remembrance and appreciation for those values and for those ideals among America's young people. But also another thing, too, we want to root out some of the bias that currently exists within instruction, within our schools and colleges across the country. Because it's one thing for civics to be taught, but it's a totally different thing for civics to be taught in a biased, left-leaning way, which we currently see at a very alarming rate. We see schools more focused now on teaching kids what to think than teaching kids how to think. And that's not
the
goal of education, or at least it shouldn't be. And so not only are we looking to further civic education and ensure that young people are learning about America's founding and the ideals upon which it was founded, but also we want to expose the bias that exist within our schools, because that's the only way we can start to remedy it. Because a lot of people, you know, that they hear about it, they know that it's going on, but they don't know what it looks like. So we're looking to shine a light on that, root that out of our schools, but also put in our schools that quality instruction about our nation and its history, to cultivate that appreciation for American values that currently isn't being emphasized enough in schools and colleges across the country.
You know, they used to teach logic, Logic 101, where you learn how to think. So when you hear something, you can add, well, is this logically consistent? And logic is just the right thinking. So when you hear an AOC spout something and say, well, this is a logical fallacy, this is a, well, you know, there's dozens of these logical fallacies. And if you start thinking, you can really realize that you're being conned. And even if you don't know all the Latin words for these fallacies, you still know when you're being conned. You know, you say, nah, that doesn't sound right. That sounds a little, especially these fright peddling. And the poor Greta, she's been scared to death by her students, our teachers, her parents. The world's coming to end in 12 years. I remember when I was in junior high, 7th and 8th grade, that we were going to have global cooling because of the CO2s in the environment. And, man, we thought there wouldn't be any more summers and we wouldn't be able to go to the beach anymore because it would be frozen. And, I mean, that scared some people, you see. And then they flipped it and they'll show a picture of a dead tree somewhere and say, oh, look at that. It's climate change and the sea levels are rising. And so I think young people want to hear this message of hope. Not the kind of hope that Obama talked about, but true hope, a hope for a future and a better future and a better America. So you have a website for your organization, I gather?
Yeah, for sure. If people want to learn more about Last Hope USA and the work we're doing, they can definitely visit our website, www.lasthopeusa.org. And to keep up with me personally, you can actually check my website out too as well. That's www.cjpearson.org.
And are you going to be speaking anywhere in the near future? Any public?
Yeah, I have a busy, busy summer planned. I'm most excited to be coming to Camp Constitution this summer. It will be my first time in New Hampshire. I'm super excited about that. I'll be in D.C. For an event soon with Turning Point USA. And also
some of our campers are involved in that too, by the way, Turning Point USA.
Yeah. You know,
I'll see if I can introduce you. I'll introduce you to some of them, hopefully. And hopefully if you get up here a day or two earlier, we'll love to take you to some of these great historic sites, Lexington, Battle Green. We have a learning center that has a couple of guest rooms, and we'd love to put you up there and take you to the Concord Bridge and some of the other great historical sites around the area.
No, that would be amazing. That would be amazing. And I think it's just one of those things. I love going to historic sites like that because it's one thing to read about it in a book, but just being there and you can feel the history. You can feel it. It's amazing.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I am looking forward to meeting you this summer, as well as I thank all the folks at our camp, Camp Constitution. So thank you. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio, heard on WBCQ The Planet. And until next week, may God richly bless you. Goodbye.